The key to winning big is using every little bit of knowledge to your advantage. At Odds Checker, we give you the edge. Better odds, better picks, and better offers to make you a better bettor. Why settle for less? Quickly compare the odds at every sportsbook to ensure that you're getting the best price to maximize your return. Visit us at www.oddschecker.com/US. Odds Checker, sports betting smarter.
Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 10th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Were you watching one of the New Year's Eve shows that was like ABC, and when the ball was dropping, they kept using Barbara Walters' It's 2020 or whatever. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
You did see it. Oh, my God. That's hilarious. I mean, it's cliche. It's silly. It's sort of even sophomoric, but it was hilarious.
It wasn't as funny as Sherry O'Terry bringing back Barbara Walters. CNN, that was really super fun.
Oh, man. It's so weird to say it.
Yeah, and there's two things that are guaranteed every year right around New Year's. One, the ball will drop in Times Square.
Yeah.
And two, about a week later, everybody that's been off for the last 2 weeks starts writing news again.
That's right.
And I know our fans think we just make this stuff up for bits and funny stuff, but no, it's true, right? I mean, we got three things to talk about this show. I've got two more things that I couldn't put on the show. In the last 2 weeks, we were grasping at straws, right?
Yeah, so, nothing.
So it's not that news stops. It's that you all go on vacation for 2 weeks and no one does anything. And then when you get back, you get all excited about doing stuff and overload the system.
Isn't it like a microcosm of actually poker? I mean, poker is like, what, 80, 90% sheer boredom and then 10% just absolute pandemonium? It's kind of what this was, you know. There's like nothing going on forever, or it's the reverse of it, I guess. Something going on all year, and then nothing going on around the holidays.
Yeah, the poker split on that is slightly better than golf, though. So.
Oh, nice.
So we got that going for us.
He just offended everybody who's not in Canada.
There's nobody that plays poker that also golfs.
No, that never happens.
All right, World Poker Tour host Lynn Gilmartin has launched a donation campaign to help with the wildfires that have devastated Australia's wildlife recently. Just 3 days into the campaign, nearly $30,000 Australian had been raised, with some players pledging a portion of the winnings from the Aussie Millions to the cause. All money will go to Wildlife Warriors, the wildlife conservation organization created by the Irwin family.
Warms your heart. It's devastating what's going on down there, but it's so great when poker players step up like this.
Yeah, it's just it's dramatic to watch those photos and videos and everything from out there and just imagine what's going on. So, you know.
It's just unbelievable. And it's like there's summer down there, right? So that's what makes it even worse, too. Unbelievable.
Everything's reversed, including the way the water goes down the toilet. So, it's true. It's all, you know, axes and stuff.
I remember the Simpsons episode where they went down there and they had to. They go into the U.S. Embassy in Australia, and then they have the machine that forces the water to go the right way for Americans.
Oh, man. Well, anyhow, yes, that's very good to see a poker player stepping up, as we know they always will. So,
yeah, great news.
All right, and the first news coming out of the case in a while, Maurice Van Standig, the attorney representing about 100 plaintiffs in a civil lawsuit against Mike Postel, who allegedly cheated during live broadcast at Stone's Gambling Hall, has made a legal filing saying summons intended for Postel should have been considered served, even though he and a process server have been unable to deliver the sermon. Summons would be even better. Or his attorney. The process server said he was unable to find Postel home on 5 separate attempts, while Van Standing attempted to deliver them himself, but says Postel refused to answer the door, even though he could see him in the house. And Stan Daigle also said Postol's attorney has not agreed to accept the summons on his client's behalf because he only represents Postol in criminal complaints, not civil ones. Judge will make the determination whether the repeated attempts are sufficient to say Postol has been served, and that would get the case moving at that point.
I would think that if they can prove that he was in the house and they're banging on the door and he's not answering the door and they could do like video off their phone seeing him walk around in there or something, then that would probably be enough to say it's been served.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how that works. Again, I'm not a lawyer, and I've been dealing with lawyers way more than I wanted to recently. But yeah, I'd be interested in see what the burden is for a judge to accept this. I mean, obviously, it's difficult to prove that you were home if there's been no activity. And according to the article we read, the process server never said there was any activity. But the attorney obviously claims that he thought he saw somebody matching Postol's description in the house.
Yeah.
Whether he recorded that in some way or not, I don't know. And even if he did, I don't know what that means. But there are also probably, I would think, imagine has to be a burden on, you know, 7 attempts, which is really what it sounds like here.
Yeah.
To serve. I mean, obviously, that was all over the holiday season. So, you know. Maybe there's a little wiggle room there because people travel, but it does seem like they've certainly done their due part to serve and just have been unable to. So
now, the more I think about it, too, I think it's illegal to record somebody in their home like that from the outside. But anyway, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I think it is. But
something you learned in high school, Chris?
The funny thing is that it was actually a former professor of mine that I learned that was from.
And, oh, you creeper, you.
And it was a bad way. No, he was the one who got arrested for doing it, I think. He told me once. But, let's not get deep into that. But, yeah, so, I mean, eventually this is all going to come out. It just depends on how willing the people. I mean, so I remember the first time I actually learned of civil lawsuits like this, right, rather than criminal, and I think it was probably the OJ stuff.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah,
because yeah. I'm like, he was.
The whole nation learned a lot more about civil.
Yeah. So at that point, they can, you know, they can basically say, hey, if we're not going to get you to what you did was illegal, we're going to say it was uncivil, and we're going to make you pay us one way or the other. You know, and that's how they got all of his money that time, right? Basically, that's how they got all OJ's money
for
the state and
homes and pension and golf course memberships.
Yeah, yeah. whatever he could keep, that was. But everything else was theirs. And anytime he tried to make money, they would show up at his door and say, or wherever he was, and be like, "All right, we get it," you know, or whatever. And so, yeah, this is interesting. I didn't even. Oh, man, what a...
Yeah,
what a
well, the last thing I'll say on this before we move on, I mean, obviously, you know, we took it on the chin with how we've handled this case on the show in the past, and one of the things I kept hammering to people is, you know, what's the rush here? This is all going to work itself out. There's an investigation going on. This civil suit's going on. Stuff's going to happen. And this was a good reminder that things have not been happening at the schedule that I think any of us expected to. So,
yeah.
To the extent I can apologize for that, I will. Hopefully one of these two things will get moving here soon, and we'll get some information to know better what happened here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. John Sofen, writing on Cards Chat, has listed 10 poker predictions for 2020. Let me just run through them, Chris, and you jump into whichever ones you think you want to talk about.
We're okay.
Not going to talk about all of them. But. All right, number one. The World Series of Poker will be the biggest ever this year. Ali M. Sovrick will win the GPI Player of the Year. A sixth state will regulate online poker. Daniel Negreanu will win a WSOP bracelet. Another player will be outed for allegedly cheating. Bryn Kenny's record for lifetime tournament winnings will be challenged. Darren Elias will extend his WPT success. Tournament operators won't ditch re-entry at events. Phil Gaffon will defeat Dan Cates in Heads Up PLO, and Mike Postol won't face justice.
Wow, very interesting.
Yeah, very timely with that.
The thing I'm most interested in is finding out if you pronounced Ali's name right or not, because I don't know.
Sure, I did not.
I'd like to know if you murdered that. You did pretty well on the last one, too, the lawyer's name. I thought that was pretty good. I figure if we bust your chops every time you do something wrong, I should, you know, praise you when you do it right, too. So I learned that from the Super Nanny, which is back on TV again. Let's see. The biggest WSOP ever. Possible. It's possible. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to agree with that one. I think that one, they're going to just miss it again. The one I like, one, Darren Elias will extend his WPT success. I don't even know what that means. Does it mean he's going to win again? Because he was just crowned, like, player of the decade, I guess, is what
right.
I just saw the other day. So I'm not sure what that actually means. Another player will be outed for allegedly cheating. I don't know. That probably happens a lot more than we think. It's just on a national scale.
To the extent on that one, I think we saw the shark circling the blood in the water with the Mike Postle case, right? So
right.
There have been a lot of people that have, one, shown their willingness to spend a lot of time digging into this kind of stuff. And probably certainly made everybody a little bit more vigilant about looking for it, right? So those two things combined, I think, just add up. It's not so much that more people will be cheating this year. It's just the awareness of it and the ability to investigate it is so much higher now than it was to have been or continue to have a higher degree a possibility of being outed, as they say.
So,
I think that I would be shocked if we don't have some kind of other cheating scandal of some sort on some level. It may not be as big as the one we've been talking about, or it might be bigger. I don't know. But I wouldn't say that necessarily indicates that cheating is better. More rampant, right? It's like speeding, right? You know, if there's no cops on the road, no one gets arrested for speeding. You put six cops on the road, everybody starts getting arrested for speeding, right? So
Does
it look like, oh, my God, why is everybody speeding more? No, they're not. Just caught them.
Just catching them now.
Yeah.
I know number eight is not going to, you know, tournament operators won't ditch reentry events. That's clearly not going to happen. So,
well, and again, this is what's interesting about this. We talked about this a lot on the show. I mean, they shouldn't, right?
Right.
As we've been mentioning. I mean, obviously, there needs to be thought given to all the concerns over why people are concerned about reentries. But there are people that like them. And as we mentioned before, there are 30-some days on the calendar every month that tournament operators are planning tournaments. There's room on those 30 days to do a variety of different kind of tournaments. So there doesn't necessarily have to be a blanket ban on reentry. At the same time, there could be a reduction in them or a reinvention of them that makes it better. But I really don't think they need to be banned. So
no, I agree with that. The one thing I don't want to mention is Dan Ugrano, because if I say he won't win a bracelet, he'll probably want to make some sort of bet with me, and then I won't be able to afford the bet because he'll win a bracelet. But he's always in the running for winning a bracelet, so that's a very good bet right there. I think that he could do that. Mike Postle won't face justice. I guess you have to define justice, right?
How long will win a WSOP bracelet where you really put yourself out there, right? I do think there'll be a sixth, maybe a seventh, or even an eighth state regulating poker. I mean, Michigan won last month, so we're up to five now, and it just seems like that's moving a little bit quicker. And a lot of ways buoyed by the online sports gambling movement as well, too. So there's discussion here in Florida about that now, too, that has not included poker, but more and more states are discussing that, and a lot of them in the same time are throwing poker into the mix. So that also seems to be a fairly high percentage prediction.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard me before, but I don't know about the Mike Postle thing, because I guess you have to define justice, too, right? I don't know what they mean by justice.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess that what that means is he's not going to get the justice that people think he deserves, or in the time frame, or more likely the time frame that they're hoping. And, you know, most people wanted him, as I mentioned before, you know, tarred and feathered in town square the day after they learned about it. So the timing is never going to work for most people. You know, there's always a chance of this. I mean, it was interesting. I was talking to a friend not too long ago about the whole PPC scandal a couple years ago, right? And I never actually heard how that resolved. And he told me that they settled for pennies on the dollar. So, and that was very quiet as far as I know, because I didn't hear about it. I know we didn't talk about it on the show. And I'm sure lots of people do not think that's proper justice for what happened there as well, too. So, although in the eyes of the law, it's justice of some sort, right?
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, the level or degree of it. That's what I was thinking.
So, but, you know, I guess they're going to have to find Mike at home at some point, right?
Yeah.
The answer to the door.
This Phil Galfon, defeating and Dan Cates and heads up PLO. I don't know. Was there something specific about it? Was it the World Series PLO?
Well, yeah, I've kind of we probably should have been talking about this on the show with Path. I just never put it on there. But he put out the challenge for some heads up matches and got some takers at high stakes.
Right.
Dan Cates is probably the biggest name to take him up on it. Okay. So for folks that like to watch these pros face off, particularly in these nosebleed games and nosebleed heads up games, this will be a good year for it, I think. I think there's going to be some stuff for you to watch and enjoy out there. I'm not in a position to make a prediction here, as Mr. Soffin did, but certainly for folks that are interested in that kind of stuff, this will be a good year for it.
So you're making the 11th prediction for 2020 then, that this will be a good year for watching high stakes heads up?
There we go. Yep, all right. Exactly.
All right, so number 11.
The Eric one, right? Yes.
Huh. It's a decent list, though. I mean,
it's not bad.
Good spectrum of stuff. I appreciate it.
We try to put together a top 10 list lots of times on this show, and as I've noticed, we haven't done it in a while because it's hard to do. So
yeah, and we always end up doing top 5 because it's just too hard to do 10 sometimes. Okay, any updates? Our Restock the Shelves Food Bank initiative with Blue Shark Optics has started, with events all month long at 10 poker venues around the country, and special events this week at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort in North Carolina and Miami Poker Society in Florida. Events and more at Poker Rooms later this month. Go to antiupmagazine.com/restock for more details on all events. And remember that your home game can participate by collecting food and or cash for a local food bank in your community. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com after the home game with a photo, what food bank you benefited, and how much you collected, so we can include you in our wrap-up article in Anti Up Magazine. Also, we love hearing from our fans. If you have a hand of the week, a listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Anti Up Fans group on Facebook. Speaking of that, you can join Anti Up Fans group on Facebook and post within there to get feedback on your hands or call the floor questions. Just discuss anything poker. All you have to do is go on Facebook and search for Anti Up Fans. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at, you know where, podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This comes from Phil N. He says, in a live 125 PLO game, the flush hit the river. Being first to act and having virtually no hand except for the ace of spades nut flush blocker, I checked and the next player bets about half pot. One person folds, and the last player calls. I decide it's a great place for the naked ace bluff, so I say pot. The dealer says call, and as he's calculating the pot, but the bettor turns over his flush. I said, no, pot, raise pot, and the bettor mucks his hand. The last player folds, and I scoop a handsome bounty. What would the floor have ruled had the bettor insisted that the dealer's mistake stand?
Elliot says, most floors would have come to the table and heard from the dealer, the players in the hand, and then the remaining players, and then hopefully ruled correctly. In this situation, you acted in turn and defended your bet when an error was being compounded by your opponent. I would have ruled that your raise was valid and the current bet, I have no idea why the dealer had to think out loud, but most dealer errors don't stand, regardless of how aggressively players lobby for it. Why would the initial bettor even ever be more important than the razor? If every dealer error stood and players could be so obviously kneecapped by these errors, what would stop dealers from intentionally committing errors that disadvantage players the dealers did not like?
Yeah, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think kind of the root of this, because some of these are, it's always difficult doing these calling floors where there are situations where a dealer error does stand, right? Those are the kind of things that people get upset about and remember more than often. So they tend to think that that's the case more often than I think it really is. But to the extent that a floor can correct the action and make it proper, they're going to try to do that. So and again, this is also a little bit of that technicality thing that we keep talking about, right? So, you know, if anybody near our hero here heard him say pot and spoke up at that point, I would like to think that everybody else in the hand would agree that that was a valid bet, and even though it wasn't heard by the entire table or the dealer, as it sounds like the case here, was thinking out loud. caused confusion elsewhere, that those players would not try to win that pot on a technicality. So,
another reason why pot limit games suck. Never play pot limit. It's just so confusing for the dealer. It's confusing for everyone at the table. Just play no limit or limit. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think anybody's ever going to say this, but the clearer way to be is I raise pot.
Yeah. You
know, rather than pot, because pot sometimes could be mistaken as, you know, how much is in the pot, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, but.
Yeah, plus it's a one-syllable word, which could be mistaken for call, like it was here, and so you just never know.
Or bet or anything. Or bet,
yeah. Yeah. Hey, we get the complete O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one, and then we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em casino cash game. The action flows like a normal lower-stakes cash game, where there is a mix of maniacs and solid players, with other players falling in between. We've been playing for around 3 hours. We bought in for $1,000 and are currently at $750. The game is nine-handed. The blinds post, the under the gun folds, the plus one limps in. This player started the hand with around $1,000. He's been at the table for around an hour and has been playing break-even poker. The one hand he showed was 8 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds, when he flopped trips against pocket jacks and won a modest pot. While he was stacking his chips, he made the comment of, "Love those suited connectors." He's been trending downward since. We get one more fold, and we are in the low jack, again with 750, and the ace of spades, ace of hearts. Decent hand, we're going to raise it up. We make it $35 to go. The standard raise at this table is 5x, but we account for the limper and bump it up one more for good measure. It's folded all the way back around to the plus one, who calls the $35, and with $70 in the pot, we see a flop of the 9 of spades, 8 of hearts, 6 of clubs. The plus one checks to us. I don't like how coordinated this board is, but I'm not too concerned at the moment. We make a $50 bet into the pot. The plus one check raises us to $150. We could be behind a bunch of different hands, but I just can't let go of these aces at this point. We call. The pot is 370, and the turn is the harmless tray of diamonds. Our opponent asks us how much we have behind, and we tell him 565. He ponders for a bit, and then bets 275 into the pot. So, are we being bullied here? Are we behind? What's the move?
All right, something just doesn't feel right here. The check raise is a strong move, and he follows it up with a substantial bet on the turn. The three pocket pairs that would have given us seven flop are all consistent with limping in preflop, and O'Malley made a point of telling us that our opponent likes suited connectors, so 9-8 is a valid holding with how this hand has been played. If we're up against a set, we have two outs once, not good. If we're up against 9-8, we have a few more outs. He could be, as O'Malley wonders, be trying to bully us out of this pot, but he's been super brave if that's what he's doing. We have one pair. I'm fine folding here, even if it turns out we were good.
Yeah, I'm out of his hand. He was happy enough to give you a free card and then check raised when we bet, so something tells me that was pretty big. And he was happy enough to bet the turn, and that he was emboldened to bet out mightily, so I think we're beat. I probably fold. Wet boards beat off aces often.
Don't they really? Absolutely, yeah.
Here comes part two.
Hello again. Maybe this is a nitty fold, but his comment from the earlier hand is just sticking in my mind. I think it's possible he has flopped a set. It could be jacks or tens, but something just feels a little strange. We flash our aces and fold. Damn, our opponent says, and flips up the 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs. So, was this a tight fold? Would calling here have been, as Scott likes to say, getting it in correct? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, just because you made the right move doesn't mean it was the correct one. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, O'Malley, not a tight fold at all in my book. I think it was a very well-reasoned fold.
Yeah, I like the fold. We could have caught up, but that was a real slim proposition. So making the right move is always great in my book. So good job.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, it's time for the Advanced PokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Matt Easterbrook, I believe you're the first time submitter here.
Nice. I was going to say, that name didn't sound familiar.
Let's see. He actually says, yeah, long time listener, first time emailer. So thank you. He says, I'm very much a recreational player, so go easy on me. So go easy on him, Chris.
All right.
I'm always easy on
him. Yeah, yeah.
I have, he has two hands here. We'll do the second one next week. But it's from a recent home game. He says it's a small game with people I went to school with, and we get together four times a year to play a tournament. So we know each other, very well by now. The villain in both hands is also named Matt. The only other player who I give much credit to as a poker player. He's very loose and will play almost any two cards pre-flop, but his raising range pre-flop is fairly standard. He's an aggressive player who knows he can usually win pots with a c-bet. He knows I have a good understanding of the game relative to the other players, but sees me as someone he can push off of hands.
Hmm.
All right, so for the first hand, like I said, we'll do the second hand next week.
Okay.
For the first hand, blinds are 250, 500, and both mats sit around with around 50,000 units.
Huh.
Hand is folded around to our opponent in the cutoff, who raises to 1,500. We're on the button and look down at the ace of spades, jack of spades.
Okay, well, if I have 50,000 chips and it's 250, 500, yeah, I'm playing just about any hand, so I'm playing a lot.
Don't say that. Everybody's going to do that.
That's a huge stack. Well, I like that we have position. I like our hand. It's not great. You're hoping to hit a flush with it, but at the same time, you know, if you hit your ace, it's not great. Cutoff raises don't get a lot of respect. Generally, so you're probably in the lead or close to it. Maybe you could be ace queen, ace jack, could be anything. Guy could have anything. So, but I like ace jack suited here on the button in position, but I like just a call. I don't know this guy good enough. I know that if he likes to push us off hands, like you said, then you know this could be the type of hand where if you just call and hit it really nice, he'll just keep betting into you and you've got position on him. So I don't mind the call here. If I think he's one of those, I know you said he was aggressive and stuff, but if he's one of those maniac type players, you know, it just depends. Or if it's a person who just likes to be really loose, I might play it differently. But he's just normally aggressive here, so I think we might be ahead, but I don't know if there's really any reason to just go over the top of him right now. Plus you still have the blinds behind you, and I don't know what they're acting like next to me. They may, you know, be looking to enter the pot with me. They may, I don't know, so there's a lot of incomplete information here. I think I'm just going to call.
Yeah, so here's a couple of things. Fans of the show probably know that one of the leaks in my game that I've plugged, that I encourage other people to plug, is playing raised pots with less than ace-king when you have the ace. Because so often you're dominated by that ace-king, or in this case, an ace-queen as well, too. But a couple reasons that I'm going to take a flyer on this one that I think are a little different. One, we're obviously suited, which doesn't make a big of a difference. But, you know, when we're this deep, I would love to stack someone, right?
So
it does help a little bit. And two, we're on the button, so we have position for the rest of the hand. So like you, very easy call here for me for 1,500. I don't really feel like I want to raise here. This is the only other player at the table we mentioned that we have any respect for. So if it was another player, then I would probably give strong consideration to raising here, because they're probably coming in more likely coming in weaker than this other Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd be happy to call. We got a lot of potential with this hand, and then we also have a lot of escape pods to get out of this if we need to. So. But it's call, and then, you know, hey, if the blinds come along, now our hand changes a little bit. Now we're not looking for that jack. We're looking for the spades or a Broadway or something like that. So it's a little different. But again, 1,500 of our 50,000. I'm going to take a flyer here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, here it says, this is not a hand I want to raise with, as I can sense some strength from Matt. I'm happy to make the call and play the hand in position, so I decide to do just that. Good job. All right.
Yeah.
Blinds both fold, 37-50 in the pot, and the flop is the ace of diamonds, ace of clubs, tray of diamonds, and our opponent bets 2,000.
Wow. The only thing that you have to really fear, you're not fearing a wheel, is maybe diamonds getting there. But we have three aces, and even if Diamond's got there, we have all kinds of outs. And even if, you know, so, I mean, I'm not too worried about Diamond. And I like to just walk him here. I think this is one of those hands that we just talked about earlier where if he likes to bet us off of hands, you know, he might just keep betting into us when we have this monster. I mean, we just flop trips with a decent kicker, you know, unless he has specifically ace-queen, ace-tray, or ace-king. You know what I mean? We have him crushed. You know what I mean? Obviously, you could have pocket threes or something, but I love this now. I love this position we're in. I love to just call here and let him keep betting into us. You know, and if he doesn't, then I'll come alive. But right now, if we call him, I look like we're going into a draw. And if a non-diamond comes, he might bet really big into us. So I like just calling right now and being patient with this.
Well, I like calling for two reasons. One, all the reasons that you stated. And then two, if we are up against that ace-king or ace-queen, I know it seems more unlikely now because we have three of the aces are accounted for, but it's still possible.
Yeah.
I would rather not. I'd rather lose the minimum on this hand. So go ahead and call here, and he's going to make another bet on the turn. If he does make another bet on the turn, that changes things. Then we can bet on the turn. But quite happy walking the dog here, and if I'm being the one walked, making a short wrap around the block.
Yeah, controlling that bet.
All right, our hero says, I sense strength here and most certainly has the case ace, and it may well be a stronger ace than mine. That's a pretty good strong read if you think it's that certain. But
yeah.
I get the feeling that he's prepared to get it in here if I raise, and that would put me in a really tight spot. The only ace I can see him raising with that I can't beat is ace 10. I don't want to raise, but I can't throw my hand away just yet. I decide to call.
Okay.
Next card is a blank, the seven of spades. So the board is ace of diamonds, ace of clubs, tray of diamonds, seven of spades with 77.50 in the pot. Matt checks to us.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, he probably is not as strong as we thought then. I mean, if we're thinking he's strong, I mean, I don't think he's stronger than us now.
Or inducing us to bet. Those are the two things. I don't know if he's that sophisticated in a game like this, but
yeah.
There is that possibility. But more likely than not, yes, it's slowing down for some pot control probably.
Well, here's the deal. Do we really think that if we make a bet, this guy's going to want to get in all 50,000 for a 4,000 pot or a 7,000 pot? I just don't feel like we're going to be in that position here. I'm not going to check three aces with a jack kicker. I'm just not. So I'd probably bet half the pot. I'd probably bet like three and a half grand or something. I just can't imagine checking here. So,
well, here's the case for checking, and I'm not saying I would do it, but there is a case to be made for it. And that is, you know, if we bet here now, I mean, obviously, if you think about it, the guy made a reasonable assumption right now is the guy had a decent hand, raised preflop, c-bet, as you do almost all the 100% of the time, right?
Right.
And it was a scary board, and we called. So now he got a little spooked. So now he's checking. And if we bet here, very likely, certainly if he has nothing, but very likely, he will fold. And we will not get anything more out of his hand other than not getting rivered. So whereas if you check here, there's not a lot of things I'm worried about. The diamonds, I'm a little less worried than I probably should be. And now we give him an opportunity to bluff at us on the river. Because if we both slow down, now it might embolden him to think that his bluff might work on the river. So that might be our chance of getting more value out of here.
So this is one of those situations where it's kind of like a coin toss in your mind because you either are giving
really
diamonds,
is.
Yeah, you're giving diamonds a free shot at getting there, or you're giving a missed hand a chance to bluff after that. So you got to choose your poison, I guess. I don't know which it is.
This is one of those staring in the soul kind of things, right?
Yeah.
You got to get a good feel from the opponent. Is he weak? And it was just playing his hand strong, and now not slowing down. And if that's the case, then I do want to give him an opportunity to bluff on the river. If this is some kind of mind games that he's playing, or he's hoping that by him slowing down, that'll embolden us to bet, which is what we just talked about, right?
Yeah.
So that he can come over the top. Then we may not want to do that because I don't think we want to go to war necessarily right now. I would feel a lot better if I got a river jack, right? So,
I tend to be a little more aggressive with my betting and less savvy. Like, if I really have a read in this guy and I feel like there's a hand that he can make that would be second best on the river, I might check. If I feel like he's got a hand that's less than mine, and one of my abilities at the table sometimes is to really know when someone has the second best hand and they think they have the best hand, but I know they don't have the best hand. Sometimes I can just read players that way, and I'm going to extract the most out of them. If this was one of those situations, then I would bet just a little less than like half the pot and just make it look like this guy's got like ace eight, you know, or something. But if I knew that he was like, all right, I raised with, you know, eights and I took my shot and whatever, then I don't know what to do, because if I check, he can only catch up by beating me. He can't catch up anymore. So it's really right. Tough. I keep thinking back of that description of him earlier. You know, we said he was loose and aggressive. So I don't know. If he is loose and aggressive, then he's probably falling in your camp where he probably doesn't have anything. And he took his stab, and then we called it. But then I'm trying to think about the pushing you off the hands kind of guy. You know, maybe you do bet out, and then he wants to check raise you because he's got such a big hand. You know what I mean? I don't know where to go with this. I feel like in my gut, I just need to bet, but I don't really know for sure.
And I think more of the discussion, I realize that I have to bet something here because, you know, I did dismiss the possibility that he has a weaker ace than us, which is great if he does, because then he's going to call probably any reasonable bet we make, right? If you put it in his mind, let's say he has like an ace eight or something, right? And he bet and we called. Now he's got to be worried that we have an ace, and if we have an ace, our ace might be bigger, which is the same thing that we're thinking about him, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, he would slow down here and call a reasonable bet from us and hope he catches up on the river. So by us checking behind, we're giving him the opportunity to get there for free, which I don't want to do. And if he has that a weaker ace, then he's probably going to call it reasonable bet. So I think all considered in that whole discussion that we just had there, I think we have to bet here. And I'm going to bet something that is enticing enough that if he thinks he has a chance in his hand, that he'll come along.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have to put some money in there, because even like you said, if you were to win this pot right now, you'd still be happy with taking it down and earning whatever it is, you know, an extra $3,500 or $4,000. But if you were to check, and then pocket eights got there with eights full, and you just have three aces, you'd kill yourself. So at this point, yeah, you got to put some money in and make them earn it. And at the same time, if you take it down, hey, you took it down. So be happy with it.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about maybe 3,000 ish.
Yeah, 70, I was thinking like 3,500 or so. So yeah, nothing like that. Right? That's not bad. Yeah.
All right, our hero says, this is an interesting check. He tends to try to bet me off of my hand, so I was expecting a bet. He's not the type to give up on a hand unless I show strength, which I haven't exactly done so far. To me, this plays into my idea that he's got a monster hand, and I don't want to be forced into a decision for all my chips. I check back.
No, I don't agree with him thinking we have, or that him having a monster hand. If he had a monster hand and we called, then why wouldn't he just put another smallish bet out there? Because if not, the only monster, true monster hand that he could have that we could never beat if we were drawing, say, you know, would be like an ace seven or an ace tray. So, you know, or pocket aces, which is ridiculous. But so I feel like if this guy's aggressive, why is he checking? You know, I think he's a little concerned with our call, just a little bit. I'm not saying that he's overly worried, but it feels like a normal C bet. And then when he got the call, he got a little bit nervous by that. I don't think he's got such a monster. And even so, the only monsters we have to concern ourselves with are ace king and ace queen. And if I have ace king or ace queen, there's two diamonds on this board, I'm betting. So I just don't know why this guy would be checking to us with a monster hand now. I think he needs to just keep betting. And he didn't. So I think you know what we didn't consider was the same hand. Something like ace jack. We didn't even consider that yet.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so, I mean, he could have the same hand as us, and he's worried we have ace-queen or ace-king, and now he's checking. But a monster hand, I don't know. He could have the other ace, like you said, but beating us?
Yeah, interesting that he has ace-jack. You might have an opportunity of betting him off of that. He might.
Yeah, he might be worried. And I don't know if anybody folds three aces, but maybe.
Probably not in a game like this. Probably
I'm betting, though. I don't like the check.
All right. Our hero says the next card is beautiful, the jack of diamonds. So our final board, ace of diamonds, ace of clubs, tray of diamonds, seven of spades, jack of diamonds.
Wow.
He says the diamond draw gets there now, and while I don't think he has it, I think he might feel that I do, and he checks to us.
Okay, well, I'd probably make the same bet I was going to make the street before that we didn't get a chance to make because he checked, so somewhere between 3 and 4,000. I mean, you could bet more. If he's the type of player that doesn't believe you and thinks you're trying to steal and he actually has some sort of hand, he might call, but I don't feel like that's the situation here. I feel like if we bet what we wanted to bet last street, we'll either get a call from a smaller ace or we'll get a shove from someone who thinks they have a really good hand, and then we'll go crazy. So, not shove, but a re-race. So, I like putting the same on a bet, somewhere between 3 and 4,000.
Yeah, I might be inclined to bet a little bit more than I was the last time, so maybe 4,000, just because we have no more cards to come, so I need to get my value now. But
yeah.
Definitely something in that range, somewhere between 3 and 5, I think, is proper.
Yeah.
All right, our hero bets 5,000. His opponent sighs and curses the last card, to which I nod and say, yep. After thinking for a while, he raises to 20,000.
Okay, well, we might as well just shove. I mean, I don't see any other way. There's no reason to just make it 40 or something. I mean, he's not going to fold now. So he's probably got A7 or the same hand as us. So
either way,
we're not losing. Yeah, we got the Stone Cold Nuts, so let's shove.
All right, with a quick check to make sure I do intend to have the Stone Cold Nuts, I shove. He gleefully calls, saying full house. He tables the Ace of Diamonds, Jack of Diamonds.
All right, those are on the board, so.
Actually, it can't be, yes.
Must right, be so like hearts.
Some other Ace and some other Jack.
Ace of Hearts, Jack of Hearts.
Yeah. Our hero says, all that effort for a split pot. I'm not sure I could have won this pot by playing it differently.
Yeah, I don't.
Probably not.
Probably not. Like I said, the only way is if he's the type of player that would fold to a raise preflop with that hand. And since he's aggressive and he likes to push people off of hands and he knows you pretty well, probably isn't folding preflop, even if you do end up making it, 4,500? I guess he made it 15.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Then once he gets his two aces, it's like you mentioned early in the hand, not a lot of players are going to fold three aces ever, and especially in a game like this. So, you know, it might have been, it ended up all in, so, I mean, there's no more value out of that at some way. So, the only way you could have won this hand is by getting him to fold at some point, and I just don't see a pressure point here where we could have gotten to the fold.
No.
So.
And here's the deal. If you want to learn, now you have a free membership to advancedpokertraining.com.
That's right.
Right, and you can sort of put in those situations, and something like that will probably play out for you, so you can see just how many times you would win or win this hand without him, you know, with a tie. So, it's a great website, so take advantage of that. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.